And it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is August 8, 2016, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today we're going to be with you in prayer for well-being of all the athletes in Rio Olympics. You know, there is a special time in the history of mankind when Olympics games are in play, and we all praying for them safety and health. And we send our best wishes to Michael Phelps, the hero of all-time champion, you know, in the swimming pool. An incredible athlete that the universe seen lately. So we send all our blessing to him. But as we start this week of Av is the ninth month of the Jewish calendar that represent all the devastation that the Jewish people have to put on their historical record. We need to remember where we are in history, what we are doing about it, and how we can prevent any further disaster from happening again in this time. Because you see, every time in when we arrive to August in Israel and around the world, we are really concerned because always something is up. So let's start with some information. So I'll keep you up to date what is really in stakes.
Jerusalem, a historical journey through archaeology and art. Jerusalem, a mosaic of different peoples, faiths, and nationalities. Nevertheless, despite this diversity, under the sovereignty of Israel, Jerusalem is a city that works. But has it always been this way? The first historical mention of Jerusalem is in the Bible, in the era of the patriarchs. King David declares Jerusalem as Israel's capital, known from that point on also as Zion. His son King Solomon builds the first temple. But the temple is destroyed by the Babylonians, and the Jews are exiled. King Cyrus's declaration enables the Jews to return and rebuild the temple. Alexander the Great's conquests include Jerusalem. However, his successors desecrate the temple, which leads to the Maccabees' revolt against the Greeks' imposition of Hellenism. The Roman Empire seizes control, and King Herod renovates the temple. A large-scale revolt against a corrupt and vicious Roman reign fails. The second temple is destroyed, and the Jews are banned from Jerusalem. 60 years pass, and Bar Kokhba leads another revolt for the freedom of Jerusalem. But it fails after 3 years of battle. Jews are banned from the city, renamed by the Romans Aelia Capitolina in order to eradicate its Jewish heritage. Roman Emperor Constantine converts to Christianity and reinforces the ban on Jews entering Jerusalem. A new religion, Islam, sweeps through the Middle East. Non-Muslims are declared second-class citizens. Crusaders conquer Jerusalem in a bloodbath of Jews and Muslims. 2,000 Jews are burnt alive in the main synagogue, and the city is depopulated of its previous inhabitants. The first organized mass Jewish return arrives from France and England. The Mamluks defeat the Christian kingdom of Jerusalem, and building and renovating of synagogues and churches is banned. The great Mishnaic commentator Rabbi Ovadia of Bartanura settles in Jerusalem. The Ottoman Empire takes over, imposing restrictions on Jews and Christians, and Sultan Suleiman rebuilds the walls. But as the empire declines, Jerusalem is badly neglected. Still, the Jewish people stream back, build new neighborhoods, and re-establish their majority by 1863. World War I breaks out. The Ottoman Empire collapses and makes room for a new Middle East. The British Foreign Secretary, Arthur James Balfour, declares the establishment of a national home for the Jewish people. Britain receives a mandate to create a Jewish homeland, but forbids Jews from blowing the shofar or reading holy scrolls at the Western Wall. Thousands of Muslims are incited to unleash an attack against Jews in Jerusalem and Hebron. 86 Jews are brutally murdered, hundreds are wounded. UN Resolution 181 declares Jerusalem as a corpus separatum, a separate entity. A Jewish state is declared as Jerusalem is put under siege, conquered, and divided. 58 synagogues are destroyed or desecrated. Harsh limitations are imposed on Jews and Christians for 19 years. The Six-Day War. Jerusalem is reunited and freedom and equality are restored. Throughout history, only Israel has protected the freedom of all peoples and faiths in Jerusalem.
All right, and we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. Now, you see, or you hear, we're talking about Jerusalem today and about the importance of her in the lifestyle of global world peace. And it's really essential to us to understand that while we are reorganizing the world with this so-called New World Order that everybody is talking about under the conspiracy theory, which might be true, might be not true, but I'm going to take chances on talking about the proposition that if you're reorganizing anything, you need to start with the truth. The truth is awesome because it's so relevant all the time and it's never changed. That's what I love about the truth, that you don't need to remember it. It's always there for you to use. Just remembering, you know, history. You don't have to recall what you said. You know it because it's truth. So while we're talking about it, I want to tell you that Jerusalem truthful existence is with the Jewish faith. It's a biblical connection that we have with the land. Zion was not created by anybody else but the Jewish people. And King David, when he situated his place on you know, on the mountain, and he wanted to build the house of God, he decided that Jerusalem in the spot. Now, of course, we all know that energy is important, and we all know that the position of Jerusalem is essential in the Middle East, but the fact of the matter is that the only Jews started building it. The fact that after everybody come and try to take it, the Roman, the Babylonian, you know, the Greek, the Ottoman, everybody, and now the Muslim, they're trying to situate themselves as the owner of that city. The truth of the matter is, because of her energy, because it's her mighty, incredible place in the world, she is the energy that bring us all together with heaven. That's what she's entitled a title for, and that's why when we talk about let me take you to, you know, let me sidetrack a little and explain it to you in maybe a way that you can understand. You see, when you are on the internet, it's really easy for you to understand that when you're connected, you're connected. When you're disconnected, you are just that. Now, it's the same thing with God and the universe. When you have a site, a spot of high energy, you want to be connected. And Jerusalem, for by all means, as that center of the universe, in inner. Now, you might have other spot in the universe that have like the gate for heaven, as they say. And I'm telling you that I've been in South Carolina, and you know, the sky are so low there that you might think that you're walking in heaven, and you cannot reject that idea that God is there all the time. Now, as a center of energy goes, it means that you have some kind of special divine presence there. So I believe that in South Carolina they have it. That's why they call it the Bible Belt. That's why they think that you know, angel sings there, and it's not a joke. You know, it's really amazing spot in the universe. Now, in Jerusalem is the same trick. You have the Temple Mount, that is a mountain, and on top of it there is a very very nice yard. And there is one side that there is Al-Aqsa Mosque that is only for the Muslims. And on the other one, there is the Mosque of Omar, that it's a kind of the little cape that you see, the golden wrapped cape that you see from all the pictures. And underneath there is this incredible divine wells of water that is famous for its existence, as they say that there is a divine presence there, where, you know, the Muslim believes something, the Jewish believes something else. But it doesn't matter. It's energy, it's special energy that is in that place. Now, when we know that about holy places, that it's really, really sensitive place to walk in, so you have to be you use all your most cordial behavior and neatness and purity on that place to maintain the energy. You cannot do else with that. It's divine needs to be holy. Holy needs to be pure. Pure needs to be clean. Clean needs to be neat. Neat needs to be quiet and order, organized. Organized means order. Order means discipline. Discipline means respect. Respect means tolerance. Tolerance means acceptance. Acceptance means welcoming. Welcoming means humble. Humble means kindness. Kindness means grace. You see, you have to respect God's place. Doesn't matter who you are in the universe. When you are conscious, and I'm telling you as one that knows about God, you know, existence is first base. God is among us all the time. You know that all. Now, the idea is that he disappears on some of us is because we don't let him be. He cannot be in any place but purity and pure hearts and soul. And that's what's wonderful about it, if you take a minute to think about it. Now, Jerusalem. Jerusalem has a role in historical, biblical idea, is that it's the capital of the Jewish people. And it's supposed to have a building to grace all religion, all people among it. We're saying all people means no exception. What happened when you have Muslim on Temple Mount? They exclude others. What happened when you had Christian? We don't know. They just we have record of destruction, right? Destroyed the first and second temple. It wasn't such a happy days for them. Now, the idea is that the Jewish people have the responsibility to host everybody. And I know that sometimes the shortcoming comes everybody's way. And, you know, from the record of our historical connection, we can say that every nation had her time at her shortcoming. Nobody is perfect, we know, but nobody is also expected to be perfect. Then Israel is now different, no difference, especially when she's battered between being a Jewish state or being democratic state or whatever other definition people want to give her, or whatever they don't want to give her, because nobody can tell us that the world accepts Israel 100%. Now, why I'm saying that? This is 7 days of mourning before the fasting of the ninth day of Av, the day that you commemorate the destruction of the first and the second temple. The destruction of the temple is the most horrific act that mankind can do to other. It means to, it doesn't mean that, you know, the destruction of the tools of holiness. It's the connection to one with his own God. Why everybody in the world is really, really upset when something like that happens? It's because you're trying to take somebody else's soul and believe and destroy it. I mean, you disrespect his being. And humanity needs to have essence. And everybody all around the world, they know their essence is what they want to respect. When people want to be respected, they want to be respected from their essence, from their own being. For you respect me. That's why people get upset when they disrespect them for one way or another. You know, you don't even know why, but they get hurt on their very being. Sometimes it's custom, sometimes it's women. You know, women have a little more fragile kind of being, and they don't like to be disrespected, so they get mad even more. And then they said, oh, she's acting like crazy. No, she's not. She's just being defendable on her own being. Her being is more fragile. She needs super-duper defense, because in the world, nobody protects your own but yourself. Now, let's keep on going. Once you understand that this world is being reorganized, and we have a known fact that Israel is a part of the mighty game. Mighty game, it's a being that God wants you to have in this place. I don't know why everybody think that when you have a joker in the mix of a card, it's really normal, but it's still a joker, right? So if you calculate Israel like the card that is a little different from the rest, you might understand the role of it. It means that when you play it, you might come with a different idea. When you play it, you might have a better organization. Something is happening with this wild card that you have that was given to the world. And as I see it, it is the role of Israel to make you come to God closer a little bit. Now, the kingdom of the universe have rules. You see the nature? Did you look around lately, around this universe that God created, about the mighty sky and the mighty oceans and the trees and the leaves and those incredible flowers that we have all over? Did you listen to the birds and to the animal? Did you see this nature working so perfectly? And did you ask yourself, well, what my role in this world and how I can connect? And for some reason we have some education system to teach us how to turn on the light or turn on the internet, but the Bible, that is educational book that teach us how to act with the universe, it's our roadmap to the all guide, all the guides. It's the guide of all time to God. People dismiss it. Oh, it's a story. Oh, it's not history. Well, if you have a book that teach you how it works, why do you trying to ignore it? What's this kind of obscure judgment about the Bible? It's the book of rules, okay? Now, when you have internet books, do you think if somebody invented it to pretend like they mighty somebody? No, there is a mighty God that invented the Bible, right? Okay, now live with it. That's the truth. You have to come to truth with the organized regime of God, right? Now, we all are players. Some people take their play seriously and they play God. And sure enough, you know that they're short-circuiting in some place. Now, the fact of this incredible, glorious day that we'll see what everybody's doing. We are on the internet, we read, we talk, we communicate, and we inform each other. It means that nobody can go crazy anymore. It means that we are going to be in peace. Well, until we arrange it, of course. But right now, we have no other choice to hang on and see who is in play. Now, what is in play is the world peace, right? Now, who is in charge? We know right now the players and we know the actors. And we know that when you start with a stone, incredible old stone, you know that corner when you have a puzzle, when you use that corner place, we said, this piece I know belongs here. It's a fact. And then everything tag along, it becomes a reality. That's what we have to start with. You see, Jerusalem is a part of God's idea of world peace. Because he asked us, please unite all of you guys in one place and give us all respect to one house of God on the mountain of Moriah. And this will be the house of God. And you guys, you'll tag along. It'll be okay. Now, if we start with that notion that we all have to start with getting along in one place, it's really easy. It's one place in the universe, only little, small piece, one building. We don't destroy anything. We don't, you know, we respect everybody else. You know, we don't mind you, brothers, Muslims, of course, Christian or us. They're part of us. They just call, you know, it's like a different kind of flag. It doesn't matter. And we start with that universe to start building a new world. Back from raptures. How? I'm sorry. I used the Christian words. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. I really didn't mean that. I mean that the world needs to have a coherent understanding that we need to go to a positive motion. Right now, everything is dismantling before our eyes, right? You have Europe, it's no time before it's going to dismantle. Of course, America is right now scrambling what to do with herself. And of course, the rest of the world we don't see, but it's any better because we say if America has a flu, the world has pneumonia. So if America is in shambles, think what the rest of the world has. So let's start with one place in the universe we know needs to have a cornerstone for God. Oh, also, you know what? You know what? Let's take it another verse. Let's think about it differently. If we got God mad, okay, and he gave us all this trouble. He gave us, no, we created this trouble. We are the result of our action. That's a given, right? Without everybody's recognize that his action is the, you know, his being is the result of his action, right? Now, I think that God can help us. Or if you have, if you're a gambler, 50-50 chance that God exists, if you don't know. But if I tell you it exists, let's see that you have it better. But even if you have 1 to 2, you better choose on the one part that, you know, it's a positive. To go on the negative, well, your life is gone. If you think that you are without everything at that point. But let's assume that we want to be in peace. Let's make peace with God. Or let's decide that we all go along in one place in the universe to see what the world can be. Why don't we give this peace a chance? Why don't we decide to get along for, you know, for a second? it doesn't work, you guys can take it elsewhere anytime, right? You can break all the rules after. But at least for one moment in time, and this is a woman who asking it. Yes, I'm the mother of my children, of mother of Israel, a daughter of a child of Israel, sister of this world. I'm asking you guys to give me a minute, okay? Give me 1 minute and time to be with you under one God. One moment. We're not asking more. Give us a chance to see maybe we're wrong. Maybe it's really easy. Because what they say is that after all the sin we made, we become a little, blurry. Our world is not really what we're seeing. And everybody could tell you that it's what it is because the perspective is so different. But if you think about it and you say that maybe you turn the light on, it's like the energy is connected, electricity is on, the light is on, and all of a sudden you're going to see differently. Or maybe if you are in Hollywood and I'm telling you, let's go to see that energy moment in time and we turn it on, wouldn't you take your camera and get, busy? What else you have to do? The world is going nowhere right now. The business is in shambles. No leader has the guts to do anything. And the only people that are really passionate about something is people that love God. Because they know he exists and it's about time. So let's give the people of God one chance in time to show you how it can work. But I'm talking not about fanatism. Okay, people of God with fanatic view are not people of God, for definition. Because fanatic cannot be a person of God. Because God is the ruler. And being fanatic means that you're trying to impose your will on God's will, which is... mathematically it doesn't work if you follow my drip, but I know that I made sense to myself. It means that if you follow it again or listen again, you will understand what I'm saying. So you give us the people of God, the people of good, the people of light, the people of friendship, the people of liberty, of people of equality, people of caring. Give us that moment in life to take the grip on the situation. Stop. We are pushing back all those control freak. We're pushing back all those security freak because you know that you can never secure anything. If there is anything not secure, is your security these days. Because the imagination of mankind is so vast that you can never protect every angle in the universe. And you definitely cannot put the fence on everything, Mr. Trump. So we are talking about the world of Kumbaya. Yeah. Why don't you try it sometimes? I think we are going to listen to the Friends of Zion now.
What does it mean to say, here am I? For Abraham, it was to receive a promise that seemed impossible. For Jews expelled from their homeland, believing even when all seemed lost. Non-Jews who stood beside the people of Israel, Friends of Zion. Amidst the evil of the Nazi Holocaust, Christians who risked their own lives to become beacons of hope, lights in the darkness. Dreamers. Visionaries and brave. I saw and behold a tree in the midst of the earth. Discover the stories and embrace the connection through a cutting-edge interactive multimedia experience. The Friends of Zion Heritage Center in Jerusalem. Now playing only in the Holy Land.
All right. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. We are in the Holy Land. Guys, it's a place in the universe that you have to decide to visit one day. If you give us a chance, we can build a holy temple in Jerusalem, so there is much to visit. Right now, the condition of, you know, holy site is really numb because non-Muslim are not really allowed to visit, or they get hollered up. And the idea is to have a place for everybody to visit, not just one brand of people or brand of fanatism or religion. So we hope that we'll start rebuilding the place for God's sake and for the universe's sake, for the stability of mankind, just to make it equal, balanced. If you want balance, if you want democracy, give me a temple. That will be a democracy. I have the right to worship my God in the land, right? That's democracy. Now, I want to keep on going on the event of today and what's going on around, but I need to give a second to the State Department so-called remarks on Israel. Guys, you know, there is something that we need to really, really remember, that Israel is like the ship near the mothership of America, and the fact that the Russians are playing both ends and they are pushing and shoving, it doesn't matter. It's not going to change the position of Israel in regards to America. And America's interest is to keep Israel in the stage she is, strong and willingful to work together. And I think that the love and respect that Israeli have for the American people is something that you can feel on the ground. I don't need to tell you. You can walk in the street in Tel Aviv. Everybody will salute an American, will talk to American, will hug American, and you know what? It will be from their free will. Nobody has to push them, and it just give you a reason to understand that whatever comes around, it's going to go, because love between those, our nation exists, and I'm in the middle always because I'm American and Israeli, so I love you both, and you know, it's a land of my God. So that's why you need to keep it really holy first, safe, of course. All right, let's keep on. What's the situation in Turkey? Let's get a little backward track. But a few months ago that was broadcasted about the willing of Turkey. That's before the coup happened, before all the cleansing and the restoration of demagoguery in Turkey. Let's listen to what they had to say on that.
Judging by the developments of recent years, Mustafa Kemal's dream of a secular Turkish nation-state is, if not yet dead, then certainly on life support. Recent Turkish governments, but in particular President Erdogan, have changed course towards transforming Turkey into something else. It is not yet clear what the new Turkey will look like, though it is already evident that this is a country that has enormous ambitions, which hint at a plan of imperial revival. The Turkey of Atatürk and his Cold War-era successors pursued a relatively unambitious foreign policy. The country stayed out of World War II, was a peripheral member of NATO, and did not become involved in the many conflicts in the Middle East, though there were the perennial crises and even clashes with Greece, culminating in the invasion of Cyprus in 1974. Turkey's nationalist domestic policy and conservative foreign policy was jealously guarded by its military, which was not above launching coups to remove heads of state who were deemed risking Atatürk's legacy. The US looked benevolently at these developments. Under the de facto military rule, Turkey was a stable southern flank of NATO, and its inward-looking policies meant the country was unlikely to provoke a crisis that might conceivably unleash World War III. The fact that Turkey actually shared a border with USSR also helped moderate Turkish behavior. All of that changed following the end of the Cold War. The US was no longer interested in internal Turkish politics. Turkey no longer bordered the USSR or even Russia for that matter. And the military's grip on Turkey's politics began to slip. allowing the country to recede back into Islamism, as evidenced by the very existence and even success of first the Welfare Party, where Erdogan began his political career, and then the Justice and Development Party. Turkish notables such as President Turgut Özal, who proclaimed the 21st century to be Turkey's century, or Prime Minister Süleyman Demirel, who spoke of a Turkish world spanning between the Adriatic Sea and the Great Wall of China, gave voice to Turkish elites' neo-Ottoman ambitions. Turkey began to shift away from ethnic Turkish nationalism as the founding principle and instead embrace Islam as the glue that binds together all the peoples of the state, which has the advantage of potentially greatly expanding Turkey's borders to absorb many of its neighbors. Nowhere was that shift more evident than in Erdogan's calling Kurds Kurds as opposed to Mountain Turks, which was the required term used since Atatürk's times. Until recently, the pan-Turkic agenda has been pursued through largely benign means of applying Turkey's soft power, both through the institution of the Turkic Council, founded in 2009 and comprising Kazakhstan, Turkey, Kyrgyzstan, and Azerbaijan, and through bilateral economic, cultural, and political ties, which include educational and cultural exchanges, among other measures. Turkey's penetration into Muslim post-Soviet territories is facilitated by the success which Turkish businesses had in establishing themselves on post-Soviet markets. However, America's failures in and destabilization of Iraq and the subsequent Arab Spring revolutions have greatly expanded Turkey's scope of interest, which now includes virtually all of North Africa. Turkey, for example, maintained close relations with Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood and other parts of the Middle East. U.S. apparent withdrawal from the Middle East is creating a vacuum of power and a sea of instability which Turkey is very actively seeking to fill, and it is impatient to do so lest some other power preempt it in that task. The rift between Russia and the West, caused by the West's regime change policy in Ukraine and subsequent sanctions on Russia, likewise signaled to Ankara that the situation is ready for Turkish expansion, with a window of opportunity that would likely not stay open for very long. The interest in countries which are not populated by Turkic-speaking peoples suggests the pan-Turkic agenda now has a companion in the form of a neo-Ottoman one, as Turkey is striving to expand its influence in all directions, including the Balkans, Caucasus, Central Asia, Middle East proper, and North Africa. Moreover, it is now willing to pursue that agenda not only through patient diplomacy and soft power, but by raising proxy armies, such as Daesh, to extend its influence in the relevant regions and even through direct use of military force. Thus, pan-Osmanism encroaches not only on Iran's and Russia's interests, but also Saudi Arabia's, European Union's, which is interested in Balkan stability, and even Israel's, which would rather prefer to be surrounded by failing Arab states than by a powerful, unified neo-Ottoman entity. Given these implications, Ankara would have been well advised to pursue a sphere of influence agreements with interested parties ahead of its military actions, which does not appear to be the case considering the division within the ranks of the anti-Assad coalition. It also appears rather contrary to Erdogan's own personality. Russia is hardly the only country to have felt betrayed by Erdogan's backflips. Turkey's plans to establish a military base in Qatar cannot possibly be viewed favorably by Saudi Arabia, which almost certainly does not desire to see yet another foreign power in what it considers its own backyard. Even the United States seems concerned by the breadth of Ankara's ambitions, judging by its ordering of Turkey to vacate its positions in northern Iraq and its unwillingness to rush to its NATO's allies' defense in recent weeks following the ambush of the Russian Su-24 near the border with Turkey. Finally, following the refugee crisis, which was wholly of Erdogan's making, in order to bludgeon the EU into acquiescence in Ankara's Middle East schemes, nobody in that organization will ever believe Erdogan is a reliable partner. Erdogan's erratic policies appear to have had the effect of alarming the EU, in particular so much so that the West, which usually has no trouble in coming up with excuses to impose sanctions on Russia, did not come to Turkey's aid when it found itself on the receiving end of Russia's economic restrictions. However, Turkey's internal political divisions and conflicts meant Erdogan was not able to establish a clear and focused policy of either pan-Turkism or neo-Ottomanism, with the effect of damaging Turkey's international reputation in virtually every politically relevant part of the world and embroiling it in costly conflicts from which it will find it difficult to extricate itself in a face-saving manner. Turkey's predicament is likely why Russia has been so bold in inflicting economic pain on Turkey in retaliation for its stab in the back, confident that at the moment, Turkey has almost no friends willing to confront Russia on its behalf. Indeed, US and especially EU actually seem pleased with Russia taking Turkey to task in order to reduce its international adventurism. In the absence of serious rethinking of priorities, Turkey's pan-Turkic and neo-Ottoman ambitions are liable to suffer a major setback, undoing two decades of progress.
All right. right. We are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. It's the week of the morning of the destruction of the temple in the Jewish land. So we don't eat meat, and this time we don't celebrate, and we don't go party, and we don't go to the beach sometimes. It's custom. It's something that we need to do to remember our shortcoming. Because when you celebrate all day long, you know that not always there was success in your history. And when you have a time to reflect on and mourn also about the devastation that life gives humankind, especially people that are endangered species, let's call them, because the Jewish people are endangered. There are not many left. We have like 13 million total all around the world. Do you get it? We have 13 million. We make noise like we are 13, that like we are a billion, but the truth of the matter, we are just busy bees. We work hard, we incredibly active, and we have a non-stop mechanism that keep us going. That's when you have that kind of tradition, when you have that kind of gene and that kind of mission in life. When you know that you are in the go, you have to keep on going, you do that. And many times they blame us for being successful. Well, try to work day and night. You'll be successful too. It's the rule of the book. You invest in it, you'll make it. You like to lay by the sun. Trust me, tequila makes your day. But at the end of the month, you want to have something in the bank too. So it won't work. And America, this time of struggle, have a lot to do with the conscious understanding. Now, I bring a segment of Donald Trump. Let's listen to what he has to say.
I have to follow up with that, and I'll be very careful here. Several months ago, a foreign policy expert on the international level went to advise Donald Trump, and three times he asked about the use of nuclear weapons. Three times he asked at one point, if we have them, why can't we use them? That's one of the reasons why he just doesn't have foreign policy experts around
him. Trump asked three times.
Three times in an hour briefing, why can't we use nuclear weapons? With that,
be careful, America, and be careful, Republican leaders.
So, General Hayden,
your party is blowing up.
All right, that was a short segment about the concern. Now, we know that Donald Trump is a man of reason. He's not a crazy man per se, but he was asking. Maybe they didn't give him the answer, so you kept on asking. But the idea is why we're not using nuclear weapon is not as simple as because we cannot. It's because we don't want to. We are going to have a balance of power where you hold the power, but you don't use it. Now, the fact of the matter is we cannot elect a man who doesn't understand or appreciate the value of his own weapon. That's a general first 101 general rules. If you don't know how damage your army can make, you don't run the army. You cannot be at the head of the army, especially in the United States of America, that it's the leader of the free world. And when the president said he doesn't have the toolbox for what he needs, he meant he didn't have the toolbox. You see, where all due respect and success of this human being that is incredible, or you get your people in check and you have that list of representatives to help you decide and make the rules of conduct, And by all means, your philosophy is very important, and your understanding. If you don't get it, it's hard to explain at the end of the race. Something that we have to concern with is like how come people don't educate people about the devastation of this nuclear weapon. We all talk about it. I think that from the last 20 years of Mr. Benjamin Netanyahu talking about the Iran danger endangering the world order, and I'm talking about order, it means like maintain the balance of power by having a nuclear force. If he didn't get that, it means that we didn't do a good of a job to explaining to the world what it means. Now, destruction, you can visit Japan, you can look at the people of Japan, you can look at the devastation of people that don't have children, what happened to nuclear facility or when it's explode, like in Fukushima. Just imagine its own self-destruction mechanism, how happened, and, you know, there was the water there and they all explode and there is contamination everywhere. And nuclear waste never disappear. Remember, that kind of chemical or base or being or entity, that never, it's always surface on the ground. So you cannot get rid of it. Destruction is a force that we don't want to use in this universe of ours. We have enough of it. Sometimes we just hold in case somebody comes to attack. But truth of the matter, you don't want to use it ever again, ever. So in conclusion, in this incredible day to incredible week of incredible time of history, when the people of the Jewish faith mourn the destruction of their holy temple, think about what will happen if you destroy now archaeological artifacts of a temple. What will happen, like they did in Syria, like they did everywhere, where you said, oh my God, they are destroying stones. We talk about a place where Almighty God was present. You know, we Jewish people, we're not talking about a present that doesn't exist. We're not talking about aliens. We're talking about God's presence. So the God of Israel has the right to have a house to respect for the Jewish people. We come back to the land. You gave us the house of the Jewish people. Now we want to have the house of the God of Israel. And it's not a dream. It's only the willful understanding that we all brothers and sisters of this universe, give me respect to worship my own God. I earn it by all means. And I think that with that saying, I just remind you all that there is a God and it's not us. So may we witness today when Zion will be rebuilt, when brotherhood of men will survive all these challenges, and we'll sit together in a real kumbaya. By all means, from the Holy Land, this is Orly Benny Davis checking off. Bye-bye. Ciao, ciao.